Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Everybody, and welcome to Onceable episode 92, where we'll be discussing the Once Upon a Time season 5 finale, which was a two-part episode, the first part entitled Only You and the second part called Just Untold Story. If you want to get in touch with us, you can reach us at Onceable on Twitter, or you can comment on this post at hypeable.com. Tonight, I, Brittany, am joined by Karen, Kristen, and Laura. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
So we're going to dive right in with a thumbs up, thumbs down. Let's start with Laura. What did you think?
I am going to go thumbs up for the first time in I don't know how long when.
Awesome. And Karen?
Thumbs up for me too. I feel like they wrapped up a lot of loose ends and there was a lot more focus in this pair of episodes, and they really pushed us into what they're going to be going through in season 6, which was really smart to kind of set it up so early in the pair of finale episodes. So I'm actually looking forward to season 6 now.
Awesome. And Kristen?
It's definitely a thumbs up for me too. I actually really love Sam Witwer, who's playing Hyde. And I was like, I knew he was cast, but I didn't think I realized he was going to be in the finale. So I got very excited. And I love where they're going with what's happening now. And yeah, it was really good fun. So thumbs up for me.
Yeah, I'm also going to go with a thumbs up. I mean, some of the stuff they wrote off was laughable, some other stuff I had problems with, but I really think that the Jekyll and Hyde storyline won me over in the end, and I was really excited, like you, Kristen, for Hyde. I think it was just, it was phenomenal casting. So,
yeah, he's great. Oh, so great.
So let's jump into our favorite quotes. A lot of us have two, which is fine. So let's start with Karen, actually. What were your two Regina quotes that you jumped to get in the doc?
Oh, yeah. I stole the best ones, and I'm not even sorry about it. For the first episode, mine was when she says, "When you're upset, we follow you to hell. But when I'm upset, I get a timeout," which is so true. And I love that she called Emma out on it. And that part in particular kind of made me mad because Emma was getting upset at her parents for them telling her to, like, you have to mourn and you have to do this and you have to do that. And she's like, no, I'm going to do what I want to do and what I feel like I need to do. And then she was scolding Regina for not acting appropriately or telling her what to do. And I was like, hypocrite much? So I'm glad Regina got that jab in there. And then in the second episode, it was when Regina's talking to Emma again, and they're just about to go up and find Rumpel. And Emma goes, "We need a plan." And Regina says, "I have one. I still have a fist. And Gold still has a nose." So good.
She was phenomenal in both of these episodes.
Yes.
I think that last quote wins the episode for me. Like, it was the best part of the whole thing, and I just about died.
I laughed so hard. Like, sometimes I'll chuckle at some of the lines, but, like, I laughed out loud really hard at that line. It was just, I think it's because I've been wanting somebody to punch him in the face for so long, and I'm actually kind of disappointed she didn't actually do it.
Everyone on this podcast was disappointed that she didn't do it. Laura, you have a Regina quote as well. What was yours?
Yeah, mine is, "As long as she's inside me, her baggage, her karma, call it what you want, will always be there." And for me, I like that quote because this whole idea of splitting off and pulling all of the evil queen away, I kind of like the idea that that is part of who she is, and she's chosen to go beyond that. And I kind of would rather prefer a message of, yeah, in spite of her past, Regina's chosen a different way. Not that that past is never going to be, you know, is going to stop her from becoming something more. I just feel like, yeah, fine, you split the evil queen off. That doesn't mean people are not going to remember what that other part of you did. So I liked it because I thought there was a lot of truth in that. And I'm curious how the next season is going to explore that truth, because I don't think you can ever totally disregard what has shaped you as a person, good or bad.
Yeah, wow, that was really well put. And I agree. I'm going to jump to my quotes. That way we can get to Kristen's hilarious quotes to wrap us up. But I also chose a Regina quote when she was speaking to Emma, said, "I'm used to suffering, Swan, and I'm used to others getting their way." And I think that line just showed how much defeat Regina has, and she's just accepted it at this point. She's kind of in this grief phase with Robin, and she just, that's like her saying, you know what, I'm over it. It's almost like her waving a white flag. And I thought that was really strong of her to say it out loud and let other people know what she's feeling, and that she chose to say it to Emma really meant something for their relationship. And then I have another quote, which is from Emma, and it's right after Henry, technically destroys magic. Gold's like, "Well, you know, there's still magic that exists in this realm." And Emma just had this, exacerbated face on. It's like, "What are you talking about?" And I just related so deeply with her in that moment to be like, yes, why is there always a loophole? There's always something that Gold knows about that he's never willing to share, and it drives me crazy. And Emma just in that moment took all of my feelings and put them into one sentence.
I think at one point she actually said, "It's called the land without magic." It was hilarious the way she looked at him and was like, "You're an idiot. What are you talking about?" Love it.
And there was another point where I don't remember what part it was, but she had this look on her face that I also related to. She was making this exhausted. I think it did have something to do with Rumble. She was just so over it, and she rolled her eyes. And I was like, that is me right now as well, Emma.
Or the look on her face when Henry starts addressing the people of New York, and we all just went, "Oh, God." And Emma's like, "Oh, God, Henry, what are you doing?" The look on her face was priceless, so.
Yeah. Kristen, why don't you give us your favorite lines, because they're pretty funny.
Sure, yeah. My first one actually comes from Henry, and it's when he's talking to Violet about, going on a quest, and he says, "Come with me on a road trip. It's like a quest on a bus, which is like a horse, but with wheels." Just that kid. Some days, sometimes he gets no storyline, and sometimes he gets some really ridiculous things, and this was just a perfect line. I do love Henry. He's good fun. And my other one was from Hook, and it was when the Dr. Jekyll character was talking about, what he turns into, and Hook says, "Perhaps next time try an aggressive bunny rabbit." Oh my gosh.
That was great. Hook is just so over it.
We had to rewind it to catch it, because we couldn't hear him. He mumbled a little bit. We were like, "Wait, what?" And we went back, and just so great.
It was worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hook is over everything. As soon as he was transported to another realm, he's like, "That's it. I'm done. Just bust me out.
Let's go home. I'm done with this."
Yeah. So what? One thing that the finale did was it wrapped up a bunch of storylines, and it kind of did some of them in a weird, we're going to literally open a door and push everything we don't want to deal with out of it. And that included all of the residents of Camelot, and unfortunately included Roland. How did you guys feel about how they executed this in regards to both Camelot and the Sherwood Forest gang, but particularly about how they got rid of Roland?
Well, first of all, I don't know why they didn't bring this kid in earlier for the emotional impact, because with one line in one moment with that stupid arrow, was crying. And I was like, this is, you know how earlier in the season I kept saying, I'm just so apathetic, I don't care, there's no emotion, I have no attachment. They should have had him all along, because 30 seconds and I was just a mess.
And I hated that he said it to Zelina. And not Regina.
Yeah,
it drove
seriously.
Yeah.
Well, I was also and thus ends all trace of Robin Hood forever. I just felt you know, they didn't know what to do with Roland to begin with, you know, and then it was just like, okay, we'll bring back Little John and have Roland say goodbye, and we'll never get, I feel like, any piece of that story ever again. Like, that's the end of it, unless they do some sort of weird soap opera-like time, like, extension, and, you know, 20-year-old Roland comes back. But, yeah, it was just like, well, got the kid problem settled. I'm just curious what they're going to do with, you know, they have other children who are now toddlers, or, you know, supposedly, you know, there are more kids around or coming through. I'm curious to see what else they do with that.
Yeah, they've done a really poor job of aging children on this show, except for Henry, because not too many years have passed, but Henry's gone from like an 8-year-old to like a 23-year-old in a matter of a few years. Meanwhile, Cinderella's kid is still in diapers. So
they and need Neil to is still being like bundled up and is being carried everywhere.
Yeah.
Like,
thrown at other people to take care of. Yeah,
exactly.
Here, Granny, you can babysit.
Hopefully they'll figure something out there. And the other character that we said goodbye to was Merida. She went through her portal back home to Scotland. She's got a kingdom to rule. No time for this nonsense that she's been trapped into. And I think that I hope that she comes back just because I really liked her character. And the creators mentioned after the finale that they want to bring back Dorothy and Red. And so maybe there's a thing for Mulan to come back with, you know, Merida. And I would like it to be just all of these ladies all the time, but that's not what we're going to get.
Yeah, I would really like to see her come back for a season that was very underdeveloped. She was one of the better developed and more interesting parts of the season. It would be awesome if they could bring her back.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I liked her from the beginning. She has such spunk, and I feel like she is also a very useful character. She can fight, she can hunt, she can track. She's somebody that they can rely on to get things done. She also has, you know, a modicum of power because she is ruling a kingdom and everything. So she's a great character to keep around. But at the same time, I'm glad that they decided to shove all these people through the door. Through the portal to their lands, because I turned to Kristen and I was like, they're cleaning house, aren't they? That's exactly what they just did. And part of me is sad because I want to see these characters again and I want them to be around. But part of me is elated because we've been having such trouble with them being able to balance all of these characters. And if they can get back to the core group, I think the show is going to benefit immensely from it. So I'm actually kind of excited for this development, even if it means maybe we don't see Merida again, or maybe we only get like a one-off episode with her or something like that. But very excited about Dorothy and Red coming back, though. I think it's really important because of the representation that they don't just do that one-off episode and, oh, their story's over. We're never going to see them again.
Yeah, I am very excited for them to come back as well, because I think, like we've said 100 times on this podcast, the Oz storyline felt really forced, and I'd like to see it fleshed out a little bit more, especially now that we have this connection, and to see their relationship not just as something that happened because it was convenient, as opposed to, like, being something real in their world. We did get an interesting addition to a huge part of the show, which is Regina battling her past Evil Queen self, and now literally battling her past Evil Queen self in this episode. But we had this moment where after Henry runs away and, you know, Regina and Emma tag team to go find him, where, like, Regina's kind of frustrated and she realizes that her magic works outside, but you could just, I mean, there's that moment where she's just so angry that, like, her first instinct is to lash out at something and she sets a garbage pail on fire. And that was sort of one of the breaking points that led her to have this heart-to-heart with Emma, of all people, in Neil's apartment. And I thought that the apartment was a huge, like, played kind of a big role in their ability to connect to one another, because Regina is going through this loss of her, you know, the like second person she's ever loved, and they're in the space of the person that Emma lost, who meant, like, you know, the world to her. So it was just sort of like it leveled the playing field for them to be open and honest with each other, because Regina's like, well, you don't know what I'm going through, especially with the past self stuff. But Emma can easily say, look around you. I kind of know what you're going through right now with the emotional relationship stuff. So I just want to hear from you guys what you thought of this conversation as a whole, if it was something you felt was refreshing to hear Regina say out loud, or if it was just like, oh, they're saying this now, but we already know this. Yeah, I just want to hear what you guys have to say, and then I'll give my opinion.
I have to say, I was a little, in the moment, I was a little like, okay, we kind of know this already. Like, what are they getting at? Like, I figured there was a reason why we were getting this moment from Regina. And I hoped at that point that something was going to come out of this, not just she's dealing with, you know, suffering with the evil queen inside of her still. Like, we know that that's always kind of there. So I'm glad that it went somewhere. It wasn't just them bringing it up again to remind us that Regina is a tortured soul. Like, it went somewhere. So, yeah, originally I was just kind of like, where are you going with this?
Well, I think it's important that they just had a conversation, period, because so many times on the show and other shows, to be fair, a lot of characters go off on their own. They're, you know, hot-headed. They keep everything inside and it blows up later. And I feel like Emma did a really good job of saying, I'm here for you, but I'm not going to pressure you into saying anything you're not comfortable saying, because she kind of knows what that feels like. And on the other end of that, Regina was being incredibly vulnerable. And maybe we knew some of this information already, but I think just her being able to admit it to Emma, who she has a rocky past with. I mean, I think they're over it, but there were a couple of moments, especially in the beginning of the first episode, where she called Emma Sheriff Swan, and I was like, that is cold. We haven't heard that from her in a long time, and I think she just kind of snapped. But in reality, she has opened herself up so much, and she just did, I mean, Lana Priya just did an incredible job of being fierce, but also being incredibly vulnerable. And I think that can be hard to balance. But once again, Regina is, I think, objectively the best character on this show, because she's so layered and she's so complicated, and she's come so far, and her arc has been beautiful to watch, unlike some other characters who keep reverting back to bad habits. I'm sure we have a lot to say about that. But hers, I think they've done such a great job, and I kind of hope they can spread the love a little bit and make the other characters as complicated and layered as her, because she's just fantastic.
And what about you, Laura? What did you think of Regina?
I agree very much with what Karen said, that Regina's complexity has been there throughout, and I think the writing of very specifically her character on these last two episodes was what it has been in the past, and now we return to that. I just wish that the writing could have been on that level for Regina for the whole season, and obviously for other characters as well to be on that level. I really like the fact that we'll get to see Evil Queen again. I think that's an interesting dynamic that she plays really well. But I hope that we haven't reduced things to just answers of everybody is purely good and all the good people act like this and all the evil people act like that. I really want to see them continue to play with dimensions of, you know, nobody has a complete moral high ground. Everybody has their light and their dark, and you're defined by the actions you choose in the here and now. So I really want to see where that goes.
Yeah, Regina has always been one of my favorite arcs on this show, along with Hook, mainly because of where their characters started and what they're trying to do now. And I feel like we haven't dug deep enough into what they're going through and what these characters want versus how they're feeling and how they are feeling defeated. And I think that this was a really key moment in Regina's arc, but it's not, we're still not at, like, you know, we're still not even close to halfway exploring where Regina's life could go or, you know, what her character will end up as. It's such a hard thing to tell, especially now where we're literally looking at her past in a physical form and having to see, like, you know, what she's feeling inside in this pull in her. It's basically like the angel and devil on her shoulder, except the devil's real, like, and she's able to be like, this isn't what you want. You're weak. You're, like, not fulfilling your full, like, power. Like, you know, just all these negative things that we do see Rumple embrace, and we know how evil they are, but we see how strong Regina is apart from her past self. So I felt a little bit torn about it, kind of in the way that Kristen was opening up with, where, do we need to hear this? Is this necessary? But after the end of it and thinking about it and writing about it, I felt that this moment was really important for her and sets up a lot for season 6. I'm a little concerned about how they're going to execute the, you know, evil queen in physical form, how long that's going to take, because I don't think it's something that can last forever. And I'm worried that it's going to be, like, either unfulfilling, or she's just going to have to accept that this is part of her and, you know, take her back, maybe in a way that Jekyll and Hyde will have to face as well. But it is kind of fun to see her play the evil queen and not in a flashback where we're rehashing a storyline that we've seen 1,000 times. This is a new evil queen, so I'm a little bit excited about that as well.
I'm of two minds with this, which is kind of appropriate. But I am a little torn, just because on the one hand, I feel like Regina has come so far. So I'm kind of like grateful that they acknowledge that she is and will always struggle with the darkness inside of her. But at the same time, I'm like, you've been through some pretty terrible stuff in your past. And yeah, you know, Robin dying is huge, and it's obviously going to have a huge emotional impact on her, but you can control it. And I want her to accept it and believe in herself that she can, you know, keep the evil queen down. At the same time, like you were saying, Brittany, it's so interesting to see the evil queen facing off with Regina in physical form. And I would always lament the loss of the evil queen, because God, her dresses are gorgeous and they are so great all the time. And I love her over the top wickedness. It's just, it's a lot of fun. But yeah, I'm worried that it's going to be repetitive, I guess. I mean, we fought the Evil Queen before, and we talked about the flashbacks feeling unnecessary because we kind of know her story at this point, and it just feels like they keep churning out the same thing. You know, she's going after Snow, or she's going after more power. Maybe this will be different because the Evil Queen will be in modern times, in Storybrooke, or wherever. But I think, like you also said, they can't draw it out too long, because if they do, I think the season's going to fall flat. And hopefully there's, like, a bigger bad than just the evil queen.
I was going to say, my biggest concern, I'm really excited about it too. I love the idea that the evil queen is a force all her own and that we have to deal with her. I agree with you that I hope they don't, like, draw it out too long. My real concern is that you've got Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, as well as Regina and the Evil Queen. Like, I hope that they can somehow make each story unique. I don't want the same story being told two different ways. Like, you know, the exact same storyline taking place in two different versions. sections of it, like, at the same time. I'm hoping that somehow they find a way to differentiate the two, or they find a way to reconcile one of them quickly and the other one is more complicated because of magic or something else. So, yeah, I'm a little worried about that, but as long as they handle that well, I'm totally on board for all of it.
I'm also a little worried that, I can't remember which one of you said it, Brittany, it might have been you, you know, whether she decides that they can't really be separated, that they are kind of one and the same, if there's a way to take that half of them back inside themselves, it's going to feel anticlimactic. And I don't know, obviously, if that's a direction they're going to end up going in. There's a lot of merit behind, you know, accepting your darker side and everything. So I wouldn't be too surprised if they decided that, okay, you know, it's a bad idea to let our evil sides roam around, especially if they're undefeatable, because clearly the evil queen came back. But yeah, if, you know, it comes around to the end of the season and they both, Dr. Jekyll, he's the good one.
Yes.
And and Regina, if they end up taking their evil sides back in, it's going to feel like, what was the point of the season? So I'm curious what direction they're going to go in.
With the evil queen roaming around, I'm assuming that she's going to go straight for, well, first of all, she has to walk through New York to Maine in that getup. I don't know if magic must still work, because she was able to rip that guy's heart out, and that takes magic, and she came back to life. So maybe she'll be able to, like, utilize the dragon's flower or something to get her back to Storybrooke. But that's a logistical problem for another season. But once she gets to Storybrooke, she's going to come face to face with Henry, which I think will be an interesting thing, because Henry has sort of kind of known what's been going on, but when he went to the Enchanted Forest that time, he, you know, she was not in that role, Snow was, so he's never really seen his mother like that, which I think will also be interesting to see, like, oh, I get it, Mom, I'm sorry I ever said, but you're good now, because this is what you're dealing with. And I'm looking forward to him understanding a little bit more about the world. And in this episode, they kind of tried to give Henry some agency, which I appreciated. But at the same time, they, like, took it one step too far. They were like, okay, Henry, you're going to take some action. But you know what you're going to do? You're going to destroy all of magic. Like, you're not just going to be angry about it. You're going to destroy everything you've ever loved in your entire life.
Right. It was a little too, like, a little too stupid even for Henry.
Yeah.
Like, I think he knows enough about magic that you can't just destroy it. And I mean, I get that teenagers are moody, but I feel like we went from very level-headed Henry to, oh my God, it's emo Henry in, like, the bat of an eye. That was kind of like, well, whoa, that's new. Though I really did like him standing up and showing a little attitude. I thought that was cool. And I am happy that we finally don't have completely asexual Henry any longer. That,
yeah,
there's
got
at
the
least
girl.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really care who Henry hooked up with, you know, in the loosest sense of that word, but I was just like, he's a teenager, I'm sure he's interested in something. So I was very happy for that level of it. But I really did like that he wasn't just Mr. totally, oh, gee, golly gee, like, compliant. I did like that he had some gumption, but I would like to see the kind of layers we have with Regina taking part in Henry. I mean, he doesn't have to be moody or sweet. He can be a little bit of all of it. I would like to see some more of that come up.
Yeah, and we definitely had that in this episode where it was, oh, we're going to give him this bit to act out on and, you know, just it destroy everything. But then 5 seconds later, we're going to have him standing on the steps of New York City, completely embracing that magic is everything and I love the world stance. And it was just too, like,
that was just too hilarious.
Yeah.
I am Henry Mills. Hear me roar.
Yeah, people of New York.
New York was like, really? Most people just would have been like, weirdo by the lion, get away. And they just would have walked by. I was also just kind of eye-rolling during that scene, if for no other reason. There's no fountain on that plaza. there's no fountain there. And as he and Violet are wandering around Vancouver, it is so clearly not New York. It was, I mean, good try, guys, but like, just for starters, the lampposts are totally wrong. I was kind of vaguely distracted by the fact that they just very much were not in New York City.
Yeah.
Well, I love that they chose to use like this giant lens flare to like cover up the buildings, probably so they had to use less CGI. I was like, clever, but very obvious.
Yeah,
right.
I like.
Or let's blur the background too of what's happening, supposedly happening across Fifth Avenue from the non-existent fountain. So I was distracted with that very much. So,
yeah, I was like, it's foggy in New York today.
Yeah, that was pretty rough. And then going straight into like this, like, you know, clap if you want Tinkerbell to live type of speech. That just drove me a little crazy. I was like, all right, I get what you're trying to do. Just make it happen and stop panning to everybody's happy faces because no one should be feeling this way.
Yeah. My face was in my hands. Like, I was ducking behind my computer, face in my hands. I was so embarrassed.
I can't handle the secondhand embarrassment here. And, like, Emma was exactly how we were feeling. Like, she kind of, like, half looks at him like, Henry, what are you doing? This is New York. Like, you can't do this here. Like, it was, they went for the gold with Henry in one episode. They got a little overzealous and like, I'm gonna erase all magic and if one fell swoop, like, okay, Henry, take, you know, bring it down a step. It was a good idea, but, you know, tamp it down just a little bit.
Honestly, I blame him less than I blame like Emma and Regina, because I feel like as a teenager and as somebody who obviously is very hurt and, you know, he did lose his father and he lost Robin and he sees what magic is doing to everybody. I understand where he's coming from. I even understand like the big mood swings just because he's young and he's naive and he's doing what he thinks is right. But the thing is, like, somebody should have told him when they had the chance, and they had a couple of chances. Look, you can't destroy magic because this is what's going to happen and it's going to be bad. And I think that was just a little bit of a plot hole that kind of bothered me. But yeah, the speech and everything was a lot to handle.
Yeah, and Henry's mission took him, obviously, like we've been talking about, to the library, to the special collections room, which I think that the woman who led them there had a really great line, and she's just like, oh, no one ever comes in here. Everybody's here just for the YA. And I giggled a little bit at that.
So did I.
But yeah, they go to the special collections room, and Henry finds some interesting books there, which are identical to his Once Upon a Time storybook, except it's filled with stories that are we haven't seen, or they're not the classic fairy tales per se. There's like Paul Bunyan was seen and a couple of others. And, you know, you finally end on the Jekyll and Hyde story, which is where we discover our heroes have gone. So what did anyone see that coming? Because I feel like I was so focused on them ruining Once Upon a Time with a mental hospital that I just blocked out any sort of, like, you know, positive that could come of this setting, mainly being Jekyll and Hyde, which I thought, I saw it and I was like, no way, how could I have been so dense and not thought of this? But I will say I am rather excited about it, and I think that has a lot to do with the casting of these two characters, and Hyde especially. I loved how dark it was, and like, he just, when he came in with those, like, you know, bloodshot eyes, and it looked like he was so drained, and he had this huge scar on his face, I was like, mm-hmm. Who are you, and can we be best friends? Because you are a great villain. I can feel it now. So what did you guys think of their introduction and this world as a whole, I guess, of these untold stories?
I thought it was a great sort of like steampunkish kind of element that it lent mm-hmm. to it. In fact, as we were looking at their lair or whatever you wanted to call it, I was like, oh, somebody ordered up all the props from the steampunk catalog. Why didn't they? But I liked that, though. I think there's a lot that could be brought into Once Upon a Time from like that Edgar Allan Poe, Jules Verne, Robert Louis Stevenson kind of era, and to really, you know, go into books like, you know, Jekyll and Hyde is clearly one. You know, we could bring in characters from 10,000 Leagues Under the Sea. We could bring in characters, Treasure Island or all sorts of places like that, that I think do add exactly what you're saying, Brittany, a little bit of a darker element to it. That are classic stories that are out there. I mean, we did Alice in Wonderland, which is also of the very same era. I really like the idea of bringing in stories like this. And specifically when you mentioned the idea of the mental hospital, I know at one point I watched them put up like a brief thing that was a shout out to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which I didn't think was appropriate or really effective at all. But I think when you go back 100 years to that dark gothic tale, then I think that's very effective and that works being transposed into Once Upon a Time really, really well.
Yeah, I am thrilled, with the casting of Hyde. As I said before, I love Sam Witwer. He's already played a version of this character on Smallville. He was Doomsday, and Doomsday had a human counterpart, like an actual human counterpart. So, like, I've seen him do a little bit of this, which is awesome, but he didn't get to play one side of it. He had to do both sides. So I'm really, really excited to see him do Hyde in all of his glory. When he first stepped on the scene, my initial thought, just because of the bloodshot eyes and he was kind of pale, I was like, are they going Dracula? Like, I was a little, like, with the garb and the whole styling of it, I was a little nervous. But then when we saw the gardener come in again, I was like, oh, man, I know where they're going with this. So, yeah, I'm really, really excited about the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde stuff. I think it's a really fresh, interesting story to use these characters to tell. And there's a lot of really good, deep fun that they can have with that. Like, there's a lot of thematic stuff that they may not have touched before that we can get into. And yeah, I'm really, really excited, you know, with as sad as we were about 5 episodes ago and as depressed as we were that it wasn't exciting, now it's just that much more exciting now to get the good stuff.
Yeah, it's been so long since I have been like, wait, who are these characters? How are they related? How is the story going to fit in with everyone else's story? Because with Hayes, everything was really upfront. Like, we knew he was coming. I guess at first they announced him as like the distinguished gentleman or whatever it was, but pretty quickly came out to be Hades. And then everything from that point was just, here it is. Okay, he ties in with Zelina, but it was never really a question of how he fit in, because they showed you pretty upfront. But when he came on screen, I was like, who is this guy? We actually paused it and we were like guessing back and forth. And who was he? The jailer guy? The other guy?
I don't know his name, the other guy in the Jekyll Hyde storyline. When he first arrived on the scene with his little zapper, I was like, what is he, a Jedi? Like, out of nowhere, he comes in with this thing that kind of looked like a lightsaber and zaps them all and knocks them out. And he's in, like, this off-white garb that kind of looked Jedi-like. And I was like, they did not go there. Like, no. And then, you know, we go inside and we meet Hyde. And I'm like, okay, they didn't go there. But it was really funny because I, for a half a second, was like, he looks like a Jedi.
This whole Jekyll and Hyde story is fantastic because I really liked when they did the Frankenstein stuff. And I feel like Once Upon a Time lends itself to stories outside the main fairy tales. And it allows them to do things like this where you're constantly guessing how it's going to fit in. And it's this weird, like, gray area between science and magic. And it allows for another dimension that I think not a lot of other shows can pull off. Like, if you're a magic show, you tend to be strictly a magic show. Or if you're sci-fi, you tend to be strictly sci-fi. They can blend these two elements together, and it makes it so interesting. And this whole, like, untold story idea and bringing in stories that are less familiar, I am so into, because I feel like the fairy tales and everything, we've gotten a lot of it, and we've gotten other newer things like Merida and Frozen that have, you know, done well on certain levels and maybe not on others. And I think this allows them to go back to classics that not a lot of other shows or even other, well, I guess some books and stuff do put twists on this, but allows them to do something a little bit different. And I just can't wait to see all of the crossovers and how they fit in. When we were on the island thing or whatever it was, it gave off a very, like, Hunchback vibe to me. And I was like, oh, are we going to see Esmeralda? Like, that would be cool. Just things that we haven't seen and haven't gotten a lot of other representation lately. They could really highlight it and bring it back to the forefront, like I wish they would have done with Hercules.
Yeah, we're still mourning the loss of what could have been with Hercules.
Right. Well, you know what else I'm really looking forward to? There isn't, at least not to my memory, a immediate Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde Disney movie that leaps to mind. I mean, I think very much so for the last couple seasons, it's been like, hey, what movies in Disney's back catalog that we can build a whole arc around for no other reason than let's just do it. And I think that's what's making this interesting. It wasn't just like, oop, Hercules, do the tick box. Now they can sell some more merchandise. I think what they're doing makes story sense rather than commercial sense. And perhaps the story, because it makes sense, is therefore also commercial. And I think that's what the difference is going to be.
Yeah, and in when they were walking through, like, the bazaar, like, they kind of made, like, reference to, you know, the Three Musketeers were there. So there are lots of stories that could come about. And at the end of the episode, we kind of had Hyde striking a deal with Rumpel, which we're going to get to Rumpel. I know. We'll get there. But Hyde kind of struck a deal with Rumpel saying, like, you know, oh, Storybrooke's mine now, because apparently it was Rumpel's to give away. And he brought along a few friends, and I'm wondering who exactly he brought along. Were they people that he had in captivity? Because he said that, you know, like, locking up problems in cages is one thing, unleashing them is another. Like, that's when the problem happens. So, you know, who they're choosing to bring about, and, you know, we're going to have to pay attention to some summer casting news to see how all of that pans out. But another interesting element to the Jekyll and Hyde story, which we kind of didn't touch on, is I liked the way that they played Jekyll and Hyde in the beginning, where they were the same person, and you kind of didn't know until you saw it happen in the later episode. But I like that they're separated already. I'm glad that that has been established, and you do have these two people. You have, you know, Jekyll with the heroes, who kind of knows what goes on with Hyde, even though this is the first time the two of them are really kind of interacting. And I think that's also going to be maybe even more interesting than the Regina versus Evil Queen, even though we said what we're looking forward to with that. I think that the Jekyll and Hyde is such a new battle that it'll be slightly more interesting for us to watch in season 6.
And also learning, like, the magical connection to all of that, because while it's very sciencey and, like, the steampunk science parts of that were really, really cool, there's also, you can tell, a magical connection to all of that, and, like, how they're going to tie that all together is really interesting for me. like you could see in their transformation that there was something missing, and with the separation they needed a little bit of magic to make that possible, and to see how that all plays out in their world and with this story, I think is going to add something unique to the classic tale that we all know.
Yeah, and just how magic will or does play a role in all of these stories, because you have these legends, like the Three Musketeers didn't have any magic. They were the Three Musketeers, the three people. Paul Bunyan was just really big. Like, you know, he's this legend. It's not so much like there were magic beans and things happened. Like, those elements aren't as intertwined in these stories, and to see what they will do with that, or if that already exists in their world and we just don't know it, what it'll look like. Because, as they mentioned, these are all unfinished stories. So something didn't end correctly. And we'll have to see what that is. We have a bunch of little things that we, like Once Upon a Time, need to wrap up for the season. And let's start with Zelena. Where do we stand with her right now? What are we feeling? What's the temperature in the room with Zelena?
I still don't like her. I think, unfortunately, for whatever reason, they have written her as in now, like, poof, she's fine, she's good. And there's been, unlike Regina, no understanding or atonement or personal responsibility for choices that she made. It's like, oh, I'm just trying to be good now. Not because she really wants to be or sees the benefit of being good. It's almost like, oh, like my sister's going to give me a cookie or something for like being nice. Like, it just, I don't know. I still strongly dislike Zelena. And as a generality, I really dislike the entire sort of shallow level on which they have written her character.
Yeah, I am still not on Team Zelena. I think that they're trying to just put her in a sympathetic light too quickly, and I am not ready to forgive her. I don't think that she's come far as a character. I don't think that her relationship with Hades really meant as much as they tried to make it seem like it did. And she has her kid.
I agree. It didn't at all. I still think, and I still have huge, huge problems with that entire relationship and how they were trying to say this was deep, true love. And I was like, really? I don't think so. So, yeah.
I completely agree with the Hades thing. Definitely still don't get it. I'm actually on the opposite side of you guys with Zelena. I did not want to like her, guys. I didn't. I know she's done terrible things. I know that the thing she did to Robin especially is unforgivable. It's still gross to me and I hate it. But somehow they made me care about her and root for her, and I'm kind of mad at them for doing that. But I think I like her because she's sort of like a Regina character, where she's like a reluctant hero and we're still getting that for her, whereas Regina I think is very much a hero now. But I like her sass. I like how she butts heads with everybody. I think it makes her interesting and compelling, and you kind of want to root for her, but you also kind of want to be like, somebody just, like, you know, put her in line. So I didn't mean to like her or be Team Zelena, but it kind of happened, and I feel weird about it.
Yeah, I'm kind of on Karen's side a little bit. I don't hate Zelena. I don't. I do agree with all the stuff that her relationship with Hades, that whole storyline was just kind of bonkers. But, you know, I do like her just kind of being with the heroes and getting sucked into this other place and being forced to be in the same space with them, and, you know, them kind of letting her wield the sorcerer's wand. Like, that kind of gives her a little bit of some power without, like, giving her too much, and she's clearly done good with it so far. So, yeah, I'm okay with Zelena right now. I'm not going to say I love her, but I like the snarky. I like her being a part of the group. We'll see where it goes from here. Like, I give her some room to grow now, and I'm willing to see where it goes, but I'm not anti-Zelena at this point.
Okay, and I think that's fair. I think the writers really did a good job in season five of distracting from Zelina's flaws in a way. And I think because we talk about it so much and we're a little more willing to harp on the things that she's done wrong week after week, because I've been unable to move past them. And I think having this forum to, like, you know, talk about it out loud really makes me harp on them. But I can definitely see where someone would, you know, want to forgive her and just be like, okay, I'm accepting this. Let's get on with the show. But at the same time, I'm kind of glad that I still have this little grudge against her, and I'm going to hold on to it for as long as humanly possible.
Well, I think that's a great word for it. They distracted from her flaws, because like Laura was saying, they didn't solve anything. She hasn't apologized for her past mistakes in the same way that Regina has, but the writers have done a good job to kind of sweep it under the rug and have her do some pretty good things to show that she is capable of that. So I think saying that they've distracted us from her past mistakes is probably the best way to put it. And I've fallen for it. You know, it's like the magic trick where you're supposed to look at this hand while this other hand is doing something else. And I fell for it, hook, line, and sinker.
And that's okay. There's one character, though, that we'll never forgive and can continue to hate until they write Robert Carlyle off the show, which probably has to happen soon because he's the one element that's making me not want to watch it. He's filming Trainspotting 2 right now. That's all that matters. That's what I'm focused on with his career. But we have to talk about Rumpel, because this episode, yet again, he did some very not cool things, including, you know, I'm so angry at him. When he went to Maurice, I just couldn't. I almost was like, this finale is ruined. I don't want to watch anymore if they're going to have Rumpel behaving this way. When he, like, went to him to try and wake up Belle, and Maurice rightly said, like, I'm not waking up my daughter for you. Like, I don't want her to live in this world with you, and you can, like, torture me and stuff, but I know you won't kill me because you need me to wake her up. And Rumpel's immediately like, I'll find some other way, and then tries to threaten him with his cane by reminding him of how he once beat him. And I was watching Maurice cower in fear. I was like, no, it's not cool.
Well, I think that's the other thing too. Like, seriously, I don't understand. Like, Regina kind of said, I mean, Karen, it was your quote about, I still have a vest and he has a nose. Like, at some point, does somebody just go up to Rumpelstiltskin and, not that I'm advocating violence, kids, but actually I am, like, just seriously go up and sock him in the nose? Or, like, Belle to categorically, instead of playing games and, oh, Rumpel, like, just literally go up to him and say, no, you've screwed up. Please hit rock bottom, because I don't feel like he's ever hit rock bottom. Like, and he's almost like the addict who doesn't want to change, because he's never hit that point. Like, take away his toys, take away his evil, and be like, you've hit rock bottom. Your choice is simple. You either choose to reject this or tough love. Like, I feel like that's what the situation is, and they're not willing to go there and address that. Or Belle, like, it's just such bad codependency. Like, it's great to believe in someone, but not to go back to somebody who is continuously that manipulative and abusive.
This episode, the moment that did me in for Rumpel yet again, I am so over him, was when the Olympian crystal and Pandora's box were on opposite sides of the room, and all he had to do was choose Belle, was choose the love of his life over power. And he dove for power, and Belle got sucked away yet again. And I'm like, do you not see your pattern? Like, can you please stop making the same mistakes over and over again? Like, it just drives me crazy. And to see him choose power yet again is just, it's the same horse. Like, we're beating the same dead horse over and over and over again. And I'm totally over the Rumpel of it all.
I agree. I mean, I don't really know what else there is to say. We've been saying this for, like, at least this entire season, if not, like, a couple of seasons now. And Laura, you're a better person than I am, because I literally thought during this episode, I was like, can somebody just go up to him and stab him in the heart? I want him dead. And like you said, I don't, you know, condone violence or anything, but I want him dead. He is an awful character. I think the writing on him is terrible, especially because we've seen them do such a good job with Regina. But like you were saying, Kristen, he dove for power again. He does it like every episode or every other episode. And at this point, it's repetitive and it's annoying and it doesn't make me like him. It doesn't even make me like to hate him. I just flat out hate him and want him gone.
Yeah, I'm over it. The whole scene in the hotel really creeped me out, where he's like putting the box on a bed and is saying, like, when you wake up, you'll remember that everything is fine and I'm doing this for you. And I'm like, you're not doing it. Like, yes, you're going to use the Olympian crystal to gain the proper magic to wake Bella, but then you're also going to continue to use it because you're you. Like, right. You know, she's an added benefit.
And he's actively said that to her. I mean, clearly has actively said that to her, that I do what I do because I'm evil. This is what I do. Like, willingly choose this. Like, he's not been coy about it. He's been very explicit in this is what he does.
And he's justifying his reasons to Regina, who he knows goes through some of the similar things that he does, but has been fighting off this evil inside of her. And he's like, just accept it. You're going to be better that way. We're the same. And I'm like, first of all, do not try to corrupt Regina, because I will come there and punch you in the face. But also, someone said earlier, he's like an addict, and he keeps justifying his addiction.
Yeah, that is exactly how I would put it. It's that he's an addict and he doesn't recognize that it's a problem and that it's affecting people, and that he just assumes that they're willing to live with him how he is. And that if no one is like, everyone is telling him there's a problem and he has an excuse for everything. And the excuse is becoming unacceptable. Like, you can't, and his storyline as a result of it is suffering, because we're seeing, like we've been saying with everyone else, we want something fresh, we want something different. We want to see them struggle or have an obstacle in their way. With every obstacle with Rumpel, it becomes, oh, well, that's just how I am. Like, I want more power. That's all they can give him, is another obstacle to get more power. Like, when does the power run out? Like, are we at the end of the power yet? Like, is the Olympian Crystal it? What are they going to write next that's, like, the next level of power? It's just not fun anymore.
Yeah, like, at some point, I'd like the power to poison him, and, like, every bit of power he gets makes him sicker, or makes him worse, or turns him into less, like, he gets less powerful the more he tries, or something, to teach him a lesson. Like, he needs to learn, and he has not learned anything.
Yeah, there's zero learning for Rumpelstiltskin. And I mean, Belle will be back next season, so who knows what's going to happen with them. But hopefully she wakes up from this and realizes, or has some sort of like Pandora memory of what has been going on, because it's going crazy up there. Never mind. I can't talk about Rumpel anymore. I just can't. I can't do it. Season 5 is over. It's behind us.
Well, you know what I'm afraid of? Not to keep harping on the Rumpel thing, but I'm afraid somebody's going to inject him with a new batch of the potion and split him and defeat his evil side. And then we're going to be left with
the cripple,
this other Rumpel. With, like, part of me is just like, I don't even want that anymore. Like, he's been at that point where he has been powerless and he chose the power again. And I just feel like it's not just him being evil at this point. There's something much deeper than that that makes him keep going back and making the same decisions. And so I don't even think I want, like, the good half of Rumpel around. Does that make me terrible?
No.
I just want all of him dead.
No, because we've seen the good half of Rumple, and even then he was willing to make... He traded... The good Rumple traded his second born for, you know, to save his firstborn. And, like, yeah, we tried to justify that by saying, like, well, you know, he knew he was going to have... But you don't know. You don't know, and it still is a problem. Like, deep down, that is... The big issue with him is that is his character regardless, is he's looking for a way to find the upper hand without, like, changing himself. And everything about him, even if he is split, like, is the fact that it's just another layer on top of himself. It's not like he's a different person deep down. Yeah, he's a little more afraid, but he's still going to be looking for that power. I don't think we've really seen... the other end of the spectrum with Rumple yet, or if that exists. Like, maybe they give him, this is my ideal ending, they give him the serum to try to split him and nothing happens because he doesn't have another half. It's just he's all evil and Belle sees that and maybe he dies.
I love that. Write it down. Send it to Adam and Eddie.
I'm just going
to
write Adam and Eddie Vancouver.
I was going to say, you write it down, and I'll slip it. Someone will slip it to him at the roundtables this summer and just be like,
okay, yes.
Story idea. Like, just take it. Just don't say anything. Don't read it now. Just take it.
Just take it.
Please.
Have it. Pour yourself a drink. Read this. See how you feel in the morning.
Yeah. just mull it over in the hot water. Okay, moving on.
But speaking of splitting people, apparently Violet... Her dad's, like, from Connecticut, but somehow ended up in Camelot. Who else is hopping realms where you could get to Camelot? I'm so confused.
Is that just a movie or a book? The Connecticut Yankee in Camelot? Like, I've heard that story before. It was a tie-in to another story. I've heard of the Connecticut Yankee in whatever. Huh. It's a story, an existing story out there. Because as soon as she said it, I kind of giggled just at the reference. Not that, like, if they were using that to connect her to the human world so that she and Henry are kind of equals, I was like, that's really cute. Even if they never touch it again, like, that's a really cute idea. But, yeah, I'd be fine with Violet sticking around. I think
Mark Twain wrote it.
Like, I just looked it up, too. I was like, holy crap. I thought that was, like, a passing joke.
Yeah. No, it's a real
thing. I knew it was a reference, but I was like, you know, like, okay, go Once Upon a Time. Use the obscure, you know, random reference. I love it.
Yeah, no, it's one of the world's first stories about time travel.
Oh.
That is so cool. That doesn't really, you know, that kind of moots my point then, where I was going to be frustrated about something, but once again... They found a loophole that I didn't see.
I mean, it's nice that Henry has found somebody who fits in both worlds. Like, that's, without even knowing it, he found the one human being in the world who kind of understands both sides. And, like, she has not necessarily lived in this world, but she kind of belongs here, too. So, yeah, it's nice that he found, like, the one person who could possibly understand his crazy world and his crazy life.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Wow, I'm really into that now. I was angry about it. Now I'm into it. See, this is what Onceable can do, guys. We can be positive, even though we try to kill off characters every week.
Just not Rumple.
Characters. It's really just Rumple.
But one... pairing as well got together and finally said, I love you, not in the wake of destruction or devastation or someone's gonna die or, you know. So we had Emma and Hook, who still have not really dealt with all of their issues, but we'll give them a breather here, you know. They said that they loved each other without the, you know, threat of destruction around them, and they did say it in front of a wedding dress, if you saw that in the background of the shot. So, what does it mean? Probably that they're going to get married and then both die, because that's how this show goes.
Brittany!
Listen, Regina and Robin were so cute and adorable, and they killed Robin, so I'm not holding my breath for any happy endings on this show.
Oh, God. I will say, though, I was really proud of Emma in this moment. I think that she has come a long way, and she's realized, you know, if she's willing to go to hell and back for somebody, you can say I love you when you're not about to die. You know what I mean? And I think that they've been together for quite a while now. Like, their relationship has been established and they've gone through some hurdles. And if that means that, you know, there are wedding bells in the future, like, I'm into that. I would always like to see their relationship to, like, continue develop and everything. But they're really good for each other. And I'm excited for that to move forward.
Yeah, I agree. I think that from the moment that Hook got back and just how Emma, you know, is very, very happy to have him in her life. And, you know, you can see her change, but you also see how she's taking her relationship and, you know, not making it all about her. She really recognizes the problems that her and Hook will present to Regina, and she's kind of focusing on putting those other relationships before this one, since this one's been so fleeting. And not fleeting in the sense that neither, you know, Killian or Emma are into it, but fleeting in the fact that it's almost ended 150 different ways, most of them with death or dark ones or, you know, whatever the threat is. And so she's kind of realizing that these other relationships in her life are as important as just her own, in, like, you know, personal happiness and love. And I think that that's a huge step for her. And one thing that I really appreciated about when she went to Regina after Robin's funeral and, like, kind of didn't say, like, oh, hey, Hook's back, like, right away. So I think that they have a long way to go, because I feel like this is sort of them starting in the middle. It's not that they're starting fresh, but they do need to pick up a lot of the pieces of what happened during this season and sort of figure out where they are. But also, they're already okay. Like, there's some things that they need to sort out, but it's not as difficult as it once was. I'm excited. I love it. I think they're adorable together. I know some people don't like it, but I do. I'm a fan.
Oh, I'm with you. I love me a good Emma Hook moment. I'm a sucker. So yeah, the I love you scene was adorable, and yeah, I'm there for it.
Yeah, and that pretty much wrapped up our season. So season 6 will begin with some new visitors in Storybrooke. And maybe magic existing outside of Storybrooke. I don't know. We'll see what happens with the Evil Queen, how she gets back, and just have a lot of fun. I really hope that, you know, Jekyll and Hyde do stick around for, if not the whole season, at least the first full arc. I really like Hyde. I love a good dark character. So I'm looking forward to seeing where the show goes. I never thought that I'd say that at the end of season 5, you guys, so I don't know how Once Upon a Time did it.
I want to know what Laura thinks, because she's been a little on the edge.
I don't know. I have to say, after this whole season, I think the show did a lot to come back for this last, you know, the last two episodes here that were back to back. But you know what? I have to say, for me, kind of the damage was done. I'm not sure. I mean, I will still watch early on next season, but if it even looks like it's just going down the repetitive path, I think they've kind of lost me as a fan. So I think they have a lot more to make up for. So we'll see how it goes. I'm not quite sure I can totally claim fan status of the show anymore.
I think that is completely fair, because I was away when Robin died, and I kind of felt the, like, you know, that episode being the straw that broke the camel's back. There were a lot of hits that this season took. You know, that episode, I was just, I didn't want to watch it because I knew it was going to be another disappointment. And I put it off until literally 45 minutes before the finale started, because I just, I knew what I was getting into, and I didn't want to feel that way going into the finale, where I knew they were going to try to wrap up things and move forward into season 6. But like Laura said, there is a mark on Once Upon a Time now, and I personally will be looking at can it match the beginning of season 5? If it can match and surpass the beginning of season 5, excellent. But I definitely have to hold it to a higher standard than what happened in the back half of season 5. Because if you hold it to that, you know, the slightest improvement makes it better. And I think that that's just not fair to what this show could be. And then they shouldn't, like, you know, stop caring. And I think that they stopped caring or lost focus in the second half of season 5.
I think it's completely fair to be critical of the show at this point because they've proven that they can have really clever storylines. I mean, we were all pretty much roped in season 1 way back when they started threading this huge tapestry of what Once Upon a Time would become, and it was so smart. And then season 5 rolled around and it wasn't the same. I think if you looked at the show objectively, it faltered a lot. And I usually am very positive about shows. I watch TV shows that I know objectively aren't that great, but I can fill in the holes. And I had a lot of trouble filling in the holes for season 5. So I think you're absolutely right that there's a mark on the show now, and we're going to have to continue to be critical of it. But at the same time, if it starts climbing back up there, I'm ready for it to give it that chance. Like, I'm definitely going to watch season 6, and hopefully they can repair some of the damage that I think they started doing that in the finale. And then going to season 6, I hope they can continue that. Because I miss what the show was, and I really want it to get back there.
Yeah, I mean, this show has had its ups and downs. It's had its storylines that were kind of a little bit strange. And people, you know, when it first started, I remember where are they going to go from here? Is there really that much they can do? And if you look at how far we've come and how many different really great storylines we've had, it was, you know, it almost seems destined to have a moment like it did in season 5 where it hits an all-time low. And I think they did. And I'm really looking forward to The Land of Untold Stories in addition to Jekyll and Hyde. I think there's a lot of new, fresh, fun material that's not just a Disney knockoff, like Laura said before. Like, there's a lot that they can move with now. And I'm excited about it again. I had kind of lost a little bit of my excitement to tune in every Sunday night, but I have it back now after the finale. And I'm hoping that when they step into season 6 and have this whole new world to play with, that things will continue to get better and will continue to have more and more interesting storyline and not just let's throw more flashbacks in and give this character an episode because we can. And I really hope they can just kind of focus it and get back to what they used to do so well.
Yeah, I have, like Henry would say, some hope. Or not Henry. Mary Margaret. Or Snow. No, not Mary Margaret, she's dead too. Snow White. Whoever's on this show in that family. Yeah, so with that, we're going to close out our final Onceable of the year. We might do a couple over the summer just to, you know, talk about some casting news or ideas for season 6. But until we decide on what we're going to do next, have a great summer. And I'm Brittany.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Laura.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.